Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to be talking about home improvement projects today. Which home improvement project do you think has a better payback when you sell your home? You might be surprised by the answers here as we visit with John Freiberger, a Wisconsin registered home inspector. He specializes in evaluating older structures. He's some information for you that will help you decide what renovations make the most sense if you plan to sell soon. We'll also take a look at home inspection and, of course, answer your questions about getting your home ready to sell or to move on or just repair. Maybe you're trying to buy a home. What features are you looking for? Join the conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. And John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Great to be back, Larry.
Which home improvements give the best bang for the buck?
Well,
there aren't a lot of them. I was reading the article I think you suggested to Jill that I read, and there's some places like San Francisco, you do some remodeling, you can get more than 100% payback.
But the prices are so insane in Boston, San Francisco, and a few other places that I think you could paint your house bright pink with green stripes, and you would get a rise in value just because a week had passed. In the Midwest, we're in a different market here, especially when you think about places like northern Wisconsin, where, you know, northern Wisconsin 2 years ago, Larry, the average house only sold for $99,000.
Wow.
Now, Madison here, we're sort of blessed with a quite a rich property market. But a lot of places in the state, people have to be extremely careful about how they invest in their house. And there's a difference between investing your house. I mean, if you buy your house up north and it's your retirement home and you're hoping to live there for 25 years and you want a new kitchen, well, you're going to have 25 years to enjoy that kitchen. So, okay, you only get 53% back for a kitchen remodeling. But you're enjoying that kitchen for 20-some years, and that has a lot of value. But if you're selling that house up north, there's no way you want to remodel that kitchen thinking that you're going to get more money for that house, because you're not. You're going to get about 53% back on what you put into it. So what we find in most cases is that if you are selling your house, leave it for the next guy.
Yeah.
Now, there are a few things sometimes that One of the things, and of course, this is especially true in Wisconsin, is energy improvements have one of the best paybacks. And throughout the United States, energy improvements are the number one payback. If you take the U.S. as an average, you get 108% back for every $1.08 back for every dollar you put into an energy improvement in your house. In Wisconsin, we're at about 80 cents on the dollar, but that's still pretty good because we're saving money. Even if we're there one or two more winters, we're saving money. So those sorts of things, and there are other things that we just can't avoid, and that is like the new roof. If the roof is leaking, it's very hard to sell a house with a leaking roof, and we need to take care of those things. And then we have the problems of misrepresentation, is that when we are selling a house, we have to fill in this thing called the real estate condition report. And our listing broker has to inspect the house as well. And if we miss something, they're supposed to fill it in. So we can't have a leaking roof and then just paint over the water stains in the living room. Because at that point, we're committing fraud. And I'm seeing so many cases right now where this is coming back to bite homeowners. And some of them did not do it intentionally. Some of them maybe did do it intentionally, but we have to be extremely careful when we're getting our home ready for sale that we are accurate and that we make wise investments.
You know, you mentioned the kitchen. I was thinking about bathrooms because the last house we moved into, it was one where we were going to redo and pretty much do it from the ground up inside, but the person who was living in the house had remodeled the bathroom and was quite proud of all the hours he had spent on it. Little did he know that a week after he was gone, the bathroom was gone as well.
That's right. And that really was wasted money, wasn't it?
Yeah, and time. So, well, Bernard in West Dallas has something that goes right along with what you were talking about, I think. Let's go there. Hi, Bernard. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. How are you guys this morning?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I am in process of, I don't need to at the moment, but soon, within the next few years, I will have to replace my roof. I'm wondering your comments in comparison of a steel roof to a asphalt roof, shingled roof, and resale values and insulation style values.
Okay.
I don't have statistics that differentiate by the types of roof that we're placing. So I can't really tell you the difference between the steel and the asphalt roof. And there's a wide variety of steel roofs out there now. We've got the traditional standing seam, you know, long sheet type roofs. We have steel shingles out there. There's just so many various types of roofing now that I think what you need to do is take a look and get competitive quotes on the types that you're looking at. And then you'll realize that you're going to get, you know, maybe if you sold the house in next year, maybe 60% of that value back out. Certainly take a look at shingles and research it carefully. Now, there's a little bit of a difference. There's one of the problems that we have, Larry, is if we're just fixing the roof because we're going to sell the house, well, we're going to a fairly inexpensive shingle.
Yeah.
But if Brent's going to be living in West Dallas in that house for the next 30 years, well, then we want to take a look at something that is very long-lived and has an excellent warranty. One thing I like homeowners to check is go to the brand of shingles and see what's out there for recalls and class action lawsuits, because we will find a couple of brands usually has 5 or 6 class action lawsuits against them at all times. And we'll find other brands where there's simply nothing. So there's a history with some companies of doing very high quality manufacturing and having very reliable shingles. In fact, we have shingles where if you use a certified installer, you can get a lifetime warranty not only on the material but on the labor for putting it on.
Oh.
So if you're going to be staying in this house for a long time, why don't we take a look at that? You never have to worry about that house again in your life for anything.
Well, that makes a lot of good sense. And, you know, if there's a particular buyer that might like the idea of a steel roof, or, you know, it's possible that that give you a little more, but you're still not going to recover.
I think, you know, Wisconsin, we're a pretty conservative state.
Yeah.
And I've seen some really interesting steel roofs. I mean, they probably work great in South Beach. I mean, bright red, bright blue steel shingles. I mean, some really flashy stuff that maybe works with some architecture. But, you know, if we're selling something in Wisconsin, let's sort of stick to what most of the people on the block have. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're going to find at that point is it's going to be the laminated asphalt shingle, not the old 3-in-1 tabs that have, you know, 20, 25-year life. But most houses are going to have the laminated shingles on them now. And that is probably the safe bet because we've got good quality. Now, the other thing to think about, Larry, is we're paying for that good quality. And if Brent's going to sell that house and you're going to look at it, he wants to be able to hand you a transferable warranty for that roof. So check quality, check the warranty, make sure the warranty is transferable, because obviously a roof with a transferable warranty is worth a whole lot more than one with no warranty at all.
There we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. John, you're a home inspector. What are you looking for when you inspect a home that's for sale?
Well,
you've got a long list of things.
It is a long list. And Larry, let's say Mrs. Smith wants to sell her house up there in La Crosse, and she's a little bit worried about the home inspection. What she can do is she can go online and just type in Wisconsin home inspection regulations, and SPS 134 is going to pop up on her screen, which is going to be about 4 pages. And that is going to describe what is supposed to be in a home inspector report. It's going to give a list of things that are to be observed and described, a list of things that the home inspector is allowed to look at, and a list of things that the home inspector is not allowed to do, such as if I'm looking at a house for you and you say, John, what's this house worth? I'm not going to give you an answer because I'm not an appraiser. I'm an inspector. So that way, it gives you a little bit of a checklist if you're selling your house. So you can take a look and say, well, we're going to be describing the fascia and the soffit. What's the material and condition? Well, if you walk outside and your fascia's rotted, you may want to think about replacing that.
Yeah.
Or the other thing, Larry, is you don't have to replace it, but you have to disclose it. So you make sure that when you fill out that real estate condition report, you say, well, over on the west side, there's 4 feet of decayed fascia. You're going to give the people who are looking at the house a little bit of bad news, but also you might give them a little bit of assurance that your real estate condition report is actually worth something.
Yeah.
Frankly, Larry, most of them are worth nothing. One reason that I love doing this program is I'm constantly finding that people don't know much about their homes. And every time we educate somebody about their home, I think we're saving thousands of dollars for our listeners here in Wisconsin.
John Freiberger, our guest today. Great to have him with us. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. A matter of fact, our lines have just all filled up. So let's go to David in Appleton next. David, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm in a home that I'm planning to sell in 5 to 10 years. I recently redone the whole first floor, and I'm moving outside now. I want to redeck my large deck. It's about 550 square feet. It's currently got solid. It's got pressure-treated lumber, which is in rough shape, and I'm thinking of doing a composite. Of course, the price is 3 times of pressure-treated. What is pros and cons on the resale of a composite versus using pressure-treated again?
Yeah, okay. Thank you for calling, David.
Well, strangely enough, David, I really think the good composites are much better than the wood. But oddly enough, in the Midwest, you're going to get about 53% return for replacing the wood and only about 48% for replacing with a composite. So I don't agree with those numbers. But unfortunately, that is what the statistics say, is you are doing better replacing the wood. Now, part of that is, as you pointed out, the cost. So if you've got to put $5,000 into a deck versus $2,000 into a deck because of the increased material cost, well, no, you're not going to get it all back. But then, David, if you're going to live there possibly another 10 years, you might have to replace that treated wood again before you replace the house, whereas if it's a good quality through-color composite, something like AZEK is probably one of my favorite brands. It's a solid PVC. It's not a fibrous composite. Then in 10 years, that may still look really good. So you're in an odd position because you're not selling this next week. If you were, it probably would be wood. But I would suggest you take a look at composite because you've got 5 to 10 years of maintenance, and then you want this in good condition when you do finally list the house.
There you go. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger, our guest today, he is a registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures. His firm is Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nador, on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, John Freiberger. And John, we had an email from Jennifer in Milwaukee. She emailed to say that she and her husband built a new home last year, and because of an employee error, they had significant water damage. The builder ripped out and replaced everything and used a remediation company. Should they be concerned that there may be a problem in the future? If there are problems, is the builder still responsible?
Well, two-part question, and obviously I don't want to give legal advice, but since I do a lot of expert witness work, I listen to the lawyers talk. So it's always best to get legal advice from an attorney, but generally my understanding of Wisconsin contract law is that you've got 5 years to find a defect in that contract. So that gives you a little bit of a timeline. So, and I think it's mostly from the signing of the contract. So I would actually check with your attorney, and that gives you an idea how long, what is this window? So if you find another problem. So let's say that window closes in 3.5 years. Well, let's call a really good quality Milwaukee home inspector in and have him go over that house with a fine-tooth comb. And that way, and you know, give yourself Give yourself 6 months from from the time that you can ask for something. But let's get it inspected to protect yourself. So talk to your attorney. Talk to a home inspector. It's impossible for me to say whether the contractor did a good job of the replacement or not. You can certainly check on the credentials of the contractor. Have people sued them? Are there problems? Usually a contractor will try to do a little hand-holding, will try to convince you that they've taken care of it. And usually if they're trying to convince you, they have tried to take care of it. Most contractors do value their reputation, so they will try to do a good job for you. Sometimes it was a mistake done by, say, the roofing subcontractor, the siding subcontractor, and the general contractor didn't know about it.
So how do you find a good home inspector?
Well, I would suggest you go to two different places, and maybe go to both of them. One is WAHI, Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors. So you can go to the Milwaukee area and look for somebody in Milwaukee. Most of them will have a profile up. And so it might be somebody like me who says, I'm great for old houses, or it might be somebody who says, I'm great for new houses. The second place you go is American Society of Home Inspectors, ASHI. Generally, Larry, what we find is the guys who bother to pay the few hundred dollars a year to join professional associations are a little bit more invested in the trade than is the guy who's doing 10 inspections a year. And so I would go to those professional places, and most of them you will be able to read something as far as the profile. And then, of course, ask your friends.
Yeah.
There's huge differences between the quality of home inspectors out there, but, Larry, they certainly are getting better because home inspectors do have to take 40 hours of education every 2 years or they can't renew their license.
There we go. Well, let's go back to the phones here and take a call. This one from Lee in Oconomowoc. Hi, Lee. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. My question is, I live on Lake Okeechobee, and I have waterfront property. The house that I live in was originally a cottage and was built over 100 years ago, I think, and then it's had some additions put on in the 50s and 60s. Now, when I go to sell this house, the probability is whoever's going to buy it is going to tear it down and put up a nice piece of a nice house because it's on the lake. When I sell it, can I represent it as a as is or a tear down? As far as the condition report is concerned, there's probably, you know, many things over the years that won't pass because of the age of the house, and the probability is people are going to just tear it down. That's my question.
Yes, and this is a good question to address to whoever you're thinking of talking to as far as listing the house, the real estate broker. The real estate broker has a requirement under Wisconsin law to be diligent and to make sure that the real estate condition report represents the condition of the house. Now, basically, you have to fill one in. Now, there are a few cases where, you know, grandma passes away and, you know, the kids haven't been in the house since 1956. Well, no, those kids don't know anything about the house. But if you're living there, you do have a responsibility, as I understand Wisconsin law, to diligently fill in the report. But you're maybe sitting on a $500,000 house or $500,000 lot and a $5,000 house. So I've done work in that area. I've done some expert witness work right in your neighborhood, I think, because I've been on that lake. And I see what's going up down there. So I don't think you have any great worries, but talk to a good, competent real estate broker and then take their advice on how to approach it. And make sure that you are as diligent as you can be so that if the people get buyer's remorse, they don't go, well, I wonder if this Lee guy covered that up.
I can tell you a quick story, Lee. I have the brother of a friend of mine had a house on a lake here in Madison, and they were moving, and he decided to take about a year to remodel the inside of the home. And he spent about a year on the remodeling, and they signed, they closed, and they went by a week and a half, 2 weeks later, just to take another look at the house, and it was gone. It was flattened, and they were putting up another house. So that kind of thing can happen, for sure. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to, Kyle in Dunn, Wisconsin. Hi, Kyle.
How's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. So I had a question about driveways. I have a asphalt driveway that is relatively shot. I mean, there's plants growing everywhere. You know, I think they call them alligator cracks, where, you know, the stuff's kind of, the rock's kind of like separating stuff. And I'm just wondering what my options are as far as, I mean, I could re-asphalt it, blacktop. Is there any type of, you know, do people prefer concrete? I know it's a little bit more expensive, but I guess just kind of wondering for longevity and perhaps, you know, maybe even resale value, mm-hmm. what my options are.
Part of the difference, Kyle, is do you have an urban house or are you out in the country?
Well, so I'm out in the country. Dunn is, you know, a little township south of Madison. And,
I'm
out in the country, and my driveway is probably, you know, 75 feet long, maybe a car and a half wide.
From my home inspection experience is when you are in the city, people care. When they're out in the country, they just want to be able to get from the street to the house. So even having a decent, good quality gravel driveway is okay. Certainly blacktop from a good asphalt company, and check your asphalt companies and check the thicknesses that they put down, because there's some really big differences between Madison area asphalt companies. But concrete, I think you're going to find, is simply going to be absolutely unaffordable. And a good asphalt driveway, if you get it sealed every few years, is going to have a really tremendously long life. So I would take a look at that. One of the things that, if you are going to sell the house at some point, maybe the people are going to want a permeable paver driveway or something, so we don't know. So I don't see it as particularly being a big problem to make most of the driveway gravel and maybe just have the parking area and apron around the garage to be concrete. So there's a lot of different possibilities there. Being out in the country buys you a lot of slack as far as what people are expecting. They're really going to be looking at the lot, looking at the trees, looking at the house. The driveway is going to be way down on the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And on to Sarah in Milwaukee next. Sarah, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question in regards to some fire damage that we discovered in our house after we bought it. Last April, we took down this old rec room and discovered that the ceiling, the floorboards, were pretty charred. We had our inspector come back in, and he said that it looked like it was fixed correctly. You can definitely tell that they, or I don't know if they did or if they had somebody come in and fix it. We can't go after the seller because they're claiming that the rec room was already up when they bought the house, and we can't prove that it wasn't or was. So my question, since we actually are considering selling the house, should we just leave the fire damage exposed, or is it possible to have like a specialist come in and give us in paper that it is correctly fixed, and then we can put up a rec room?
Yes.
What do you think the best options are?
The best option is to talk to a professional engineer, that somebody has a PE license in the Milwaukee area. What they will do is PE, professional engineer.
Okay.
So, and it's hard to find somebody who do residential. Most people avoid residential. It's difficult to do residential. But what they will do is they will come in with a little probe, and they will see how much of these floor joists are left. So maybe they were 2x10s originally, and now they're, you know, 2x9s or something. But then they can very easily measure the spans, and they can calculate whether there is enough wood there so that there's no danger of having excess movement in the floor or a shear condition. They should be able to write you a report, and they will stamp it. At that point, you put that in the folder of things that you're selling, take a couple of pictures of it, and then go ahead and complete that room is what I would suggest. The second thing I would suggest for certain is to talk to the broker you're going to list it with and ask for that gentleman or lady's advice as well. Because each area in the state is a little bit different as far as what people's expectations are. And they are going to know the local culture there, whereas I simply don't.
Well,
okay.
Makes good sense. There you go. Thank you so much, Sarah. And on to Nick in Appleton. Nick, hi. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I just had a question about sill seal. I'm building a new house, and most of the products are foam-type products, but I did see one on a YouTube online. It's an EPDM product, and I was wondering if you knew about that and where I could get it.
Yes, there are there's several different types of sill seals out there. And, Nick, one of the things that I recommend if you're doing a new house is that you spray foam insulate the sill boxes.
Mm-hmm. I planned on doing that.
Right. And if you're doing that and you lap down over that joint, then that is going to give you an extra layer of protection. As far as finding EPDM or butyl or bitumen sill seal, talk to one of the larger distributors in your area. I don't know if there's an ABC up there, but check with the largest lumber yard up there and then check with one of the larger distributors. They are more likely to have something like that than are one of the big boxes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And let's move right on to Kevin in La Crosse next. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
See, over here in La Crosse, I have a really nice older home. It was built in the late 50s. It's very solid, very soundproofed. I really can't hear much of anything from the inside in terms of outside noise. But it's got the original windows in it. I'm going to be selling it in a month or two, and the windows work. They go, you know, up and down. I will admit they're a little tight, so I don't know if wax or some. But my question is, do you think it would be worth my while to replace? It's mainly the two bedrooms, so there's four windows in total. Would I be better off replacing those for sale value, or should I just try to make them easier to move up and down?
Make them easier to move up and down. Do these windows have a metal track, an aluminum or a steel track?
I believe they do. I'm not at home right now, but they do.
Many of the windows from the 50, there was a company out there called ROW, made a wonderful window. And okay. If there are screws in that steel track, then those windows mm-hmm. are adjustable. And you can make them looser by putting a screwdriver into the two or three screws in the track and turning it clockwise. And if you turn it counterclockwise, you'll make them tighter. And some people, like my grandfather, used to loosen the windows in the summer and tighten them up in the winter. So take a look at that. If those are ROW or an ROW knockoff that has that tightening capability, you may find that with a screwdriver going around the house, you're going to make those windows work great.
Great. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. John Freiberger, our guest today. His firm is Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg and Madison. Great to have him along again. Questions for him. We've talked a bit about resale value and whether or not any particular home improvement that you have in your mind on mine will help or hinder in terms of resale. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And, of course, we're taking all home improvement questions as we move along. Bob in West Bend up next. Bob, hello.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have the light-colored wavy line at the base of my basement block on the in the inside. Is that related to the weather next to the floor?
Okay, so right next to the floor, you say a wavy line.
It's kind of wavy. It may vary about within 2 inches of amplitude or whatever you call it.
Sure, certainly. Okay, so it's sort of, you got a little, sort of a little sine wave there. Is it sort of white, white or gray?
It's white.
It's white. Okay, and if you rub your finger on it, does it come off on your finger?
I don't know. I can go down there and check it.
I think you're going to find that it will rub off on your finger, and that if you washed it with a vinegar water solution, that it would probably totally disappear. I think that what you've got there is you've got what's called efflorescence.
Okay.
So you've got mineral salts or calcium carbonate or some other calcium solution that is coming out of the concrete blocks. And it's coming out in very, very, very tiny amounts. It's probably being actually carried out not on liquid water, Bob, but on water vapor. Because concrete block foundations, concrete masonry units known as CMUs, are a really heavy form of sponge. So moisture does move through them. So your walls probably have some damp soil outside. These are hollow blocks, so if any water gets into the wall, it tends to drop down to the bottom. And then slowly that liquid water may turn to water vapor. It'll dry towards the inside because the inside of your house is drier than the soil. And we know that water moves from high pressure to low pressure. So you may find that this is simply efflorescence. And if you want to wash it off, you can probably simply wash it off. It probably will redevelop over a period of time, but it should not be damaging your walls. Do go outside, check your gutters, check your drainage, you know, make sure the water is getting away from your house. Concrete block walls are very fragile, especially the older ones. And if we get saturated soil and it freezes, we can break concrete block walls. So the wall is giving you a little bit of a warning if there's a little bit of moisture around the walls or getting through them. So go ahead and investigate. Get your maintenance done in advance so that you never have a real problem. And then if you want to get rid of the efflorescence, just wash it away.
There we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And Deb in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, Deb.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for doing this program.
Sure.
We are trying, my brother and I, to sell a home for my parents that they bought in 2003. And in the last week, two contractors have looked at it because there were some soft floorboards in two of the bedrooms. And they have discovered that in the crawl space, there's no basement, that there was apparently... not some ceiling work or cement put in the crawl space, and so there's been a lot of water leaking in, and that's what's causing rotting of the wood on top of the foundation and also the floorboards. And their solution is to jack up the property and replace all of this. But what I'm wondering is, my parents bought this in 2003, and I am curious to go back and see what was in those documents in terms of disclosure, because it sounds like the foundation was not built properly.
Ed, Deb, how old is the house?
That's a good question. I think it was built in the 30s or 40s.
30s or 40s. Okay, yeah. That was not an uncommon technique back then. We still find houses built in the 70s with dirt crawl spaces.
Okay.
Usually they have a basement, but dirt crawl space. But yes, the soil moisture comes out of the soil, and the humidity gets high because it's poorly vented, and we end up with some pretty terrible decay.
Okay.
And
that's just the way it is, huh?
It is the way it is. What you need to do is simply to talk to good contractors. If you've got significant decay there, then you are looking at some pretty significant repairs.
Correct.
And okay. You know, it's a very unfortunate situation, but it's a caution to everybody out there, especially the people that have the really old homes. When we get to into the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, we find so many dirt crawl spaces. And we'll find not only that the macrofungal wood decays, we'll find these nasty little powder post beetles that dig their way through the wood and turn it to sawdust from the inside out. So it's very important for everybody to seal their crawl spaces and to make sure that they are properly vented so we don't have the problems that that Deb's having here in Madison.
There we go.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate this information.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Deb. Appreciate your call. And nowadays, if you're putting in something maybe it's a deck or something, or you're adding an addition to the home and it's not going to have a basement under it, there are things that you can do to help mitigate that problem. I mean, you can cover the ground, can't you?
Well, it's actually required by the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code now, as we simply cannot have that situation. The other problem that we have besides the water vapor, Larry, is we've got the possibility of radon coming out of the soil as well. And we have areas around Madison and in Madison, like the Shorewood neighborhood, a lot of Sun Prairie, has some very high radon because of fractured rock, because of sandy soil. So it's extremely important for anyone who has an open dirt crawl space in their house to at least cover it with like an 8-millimeter plastic seal to the walls. And anyone should be able to go online and get some information, YouTube videos, yeah, whatever, on how to seal your crawl space.
We did that with a home when we are with a cabin that we built up north, and did that a long time ago. I can remember being under that crawl space, putting that in. It wasn't much fun to put it in, I can tell you that.
But well worth it, as Deb points out to us.
Let's go to Patty in Waukesha next. Hi, Patty.
Oh, hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, my husband and I live in North Prairie, and we have had our home for, we built it 23 years ago, and we built it with cedar siding. And I'll be retiring soon, and I think we'll probably be selling the house within 5 to 7 years. But I was wondering if it's worth it to have that concrete siding put on, or should we just keep staining the cedar?
If the cedar is maintainable, I don't see why you wouldn't keep the cedar, because cedar is a wonderful product. Is it shedding stain or paint, or is it cupping and warping?
Nope, it's in great shape. My husband stains it every 7 years. He replaces boards that are rotted. It's just what I'm thinking for maintenance-wise. I was thinking if you sell it, maybe somebody would be more apt to buy it. It would just be about $30,000 to $35,000 to re-side it.
Oh, I can give you a real clear answer on that then. No.
Oh, okay, then definitely. All right.
No, first, you're not going to get your money back. Second is 90% of the cementous siding we see that's put in has problems. Most of those problems have to do with incorrect maintenance. We are getting to the point where if we specify cement siding or a manufactured siding as well as a cedar siding, is we say that it has to be a rain screen system with an air gap behind it. So the concern is that it might actually be more like $45,000 by the time you do it right, and you certainly are not going to get that out of the house. And the cedar, let's just keep this wood.
Yeah,
let's keep this wood going. Stain it as infrequently as possible. Make sure that your stain has good breathability, because at some point you're going to get such a thick skin that's going to be a problem. Right. If you're using a semi-transparent sort of stain, one that stays nice and breathable, that's great. You may be able to get many more years out of the cedar. If it's not cupping and warping now, it probably won't.
There you go.
Yeah, no, it looks great. But thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger, our guest today, his firm, Freiberger and Associates. Our guest here on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking home improvement. Maybe increasing the resale value of your home with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates, Madison and Fitchburg. Always great to have him come by. Lots of callers online, so I think we'll go right to the phones. And to Gus in Menominee, I believe. Gus, hi. Thank you for calling.
Sure. I'm asking for advice of what a 78-year-old gentleman, I hope, should do on a house with hardwood with wood floors that have not been taken care of. At some point in time, I'm going to need to sell a house, hopefully 20 years from now. But should I have the floors sanded, refinished? Should I cover them with carpet? Or should I leave them as they are and let somebody else take care of it?
Yeah. That's a good question. And we talked a little bit earlier about local culture, is that we don't know the local culture. What are the expectations up in Menominee? Do people really like hardwood floors? Now, what I'm finding is more and more people like hardwood floors and want to avoid carpet because of children with asthma. No. Is they can keep floors, they can keep wood floors dust free, whereas carpet really becomes a bit of a maintenance issue.
Interesting. So then the question is, should I leave them for somebody else to refinish, stain, or whatever, or should I go ahead and do it myself? And I got an estimate to be about $4,000 to refinish them.
I would get at least three estimates and check very carefully on who is sanding the floors for you. There is a gigantic difference in the Madison area. I'd say a difference of 100% sometimes between quotes for hardwood floor refinishing. And one of the least expensive people around here is actually the best. So do a little bit more checking.
But you are suggesting that it would be best instead of leaving them to refinish them.
Yes. Well, here's the problem is, one, if it's maple or oak or anything, once the grain gets open, we start getting wear and oxidation, and then we actually start getting some deterioration in the wood. And I don't want that valuable wood to deteriorate in your home. So I would go ahead and get them refinished. Now, think about whether you want a Swedish water finish or the polyurethane finish, old-fashioned varnish finish. Do a little bit of looking online at the finishes available. Talk to at least three good people that you can get good recommendations from neighbors up in Menominee. And then I would go ahead and do them. If you take good care of them, when you sell the house in 20 years, they're still going to be in nice shape.
I had mine redone, Gus, and they're so beautiful. I mean, they look so wonderful when they're finished. You'll appreciate it yourself a lot.
And, Gus, that carpet is not going to last. I mean, if you sell the house in 7 years, you're going to go, well, I got to replace the carpet. It looks shabby. I've been walking on this for 7 years. So hardwood is one of these great green, environmentally, it's a green product. It, believe it or not, it grows on trees. And as long as we maintain it, then we're doing a really good job for the environment.
Okay, well, you mentioned several products for finishing. Is there any one that you would recommend for durability?
I tend to use the watertight finish because there are some watertight finishes out there where if you've got a traffic pattern in your house or you got the place where the dog's always going in and out and you're going to get some wear, that you can actually refinish that little area by yourself with a little steel wool. Now, using a polyurethane or a varnish, you generally can't do that. So educate yourself about the various types of finishes. If you've got a good independent paint store up there, you might even go in and talk to the person there and say, tell me about products that one would put on a floor.
Okay.
Get yourself well educated, and then you're going to get 20 years worth of value out of the investment you make.
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Gus. And Jim in Freedom, Wisconsin, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello. You had a guy call in about replacing his wood deck with a composite.
Yeah.
There's one thing the guy should really think about is the framing on it on 2-foot centers or 16-inch centers, because you don't want to put composite on 2-foot centers. It'll get wavy.
That is correct. And most of the composites is you can simply get the installation instructions. So if you're like, let's say I mentioned AZEK as one, you can go to the AZEK site and they will let you know. And the other thing, thanks for calling, Jim, because the other thing we want to think about with decks is we want to make sure that this deck actually is a safe deck. And Larry and I did a deck program 6 months ago, and we have this thing, the American Wood Institute. If you go to the American Wood Institute, you can download a deck inspection program. And the American Wood Institute has designed this deck inspection so it conforms both to the International Residential Code and the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code. So good reminder, Jim, I should have told him to do a structural inspection before he resurfaces it. So thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. And on to William in Fond du Lac. William, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'd like the gentleman with the quiet house and maybe having the ROW or the Royal Oak windows. My house is very loud from street noise. Wondering what I can do about that. It's built in 1994, 2x6 construction, 1 inch of foam, and weather shield double hung.
Okay, so we've got a weather shield double hung, so you do not have storm windows. You just have a screen on the exterior?
Aluminum combination.
Aluminum combination, okay. Generally, when houses are noisy, most of that noise is coming through the window. I worked on a B&B here on Madison on Monroe Street, and it was noisier than heck, and people were trying to sleep. What we ended up doing is we ended up getting combination windows made for the street side that had quarter-inch plate glass in them. And what attenuates noise is really mass. So that is perhaps what you're going to have to look at, is replace the combos on the noisy side with something that is pretty heavy-duty. And you're probably going to be looking at... Probably looking at some specialized, I know they're available because I've installed them, but you're probably going to have to do a little bit of research to see who exactly can get them for you. Also, the ones that we use were not aluminum, but they had wood frames because there's more mass to the wood, and so that stops more sound. So we're looking at a wooden combination with a heavy-duty glass in them.
On the noisy side.
On the noisy side, right.
Okay, yes, and the appearance inside stays the same because the sash never gets affected.
Correct. It'll look exactly the same from the outside.
Okay, that'll be something I'll try then. Thank you very much.
Had somebody in Milwaukee who did that for their home, and were just absolutely amazed at how much quieter the home got. It was unbelievable.
I'm going to be doing it on my own home this year, Larry, because I live on Highway M, and Highway M has become a highway.
There we go. Pete in Madison. Hello, thanks for calling.
Hello. I'm asking about my front porch. I live in Madison. I have a cement porch that's not enclosed or anything. It's like the sort of just cosmetic held up by posts. It's, I don't know, maybe 8 feet wide, and it's cracked more or less in the middle, just, I guess, what, south of the door, the front door, and the north end is just perfect. That south end is all perfect except where it's cracked, and it has sunk down on the, I guess that would be the east side, against the wall, maybe 3 inches. And I'm wondering about jacking it up or having stuff inserted underneath it or just having it relayed. And I'm thinking that in the context of selling the house within the next probably 5 years.
Right. Yeah, if we've got some slope to it, it could be a slip and fall in the winter because, you know, we really want things to be flat when we're walking on them. I'm always concerned when we've got large masses of concrete next to foundation walls. Do you have a poured concrete basement or a concrete block basement?
Poured.
Okay, good. That's better than block. Because block, I've seen, just last week, I stopped and looked at a lady's house, and her side stoop was rotating and had shoved her concrete block wall in by three quarters of an inch. So I would talk to a local foam jacker first. They're like the mud jackers, except they use a foam that stays hard, and see if they think they can safely do it. That would be the place to start. If they don't think they can safely do it, then you might be looking at having to talk to a landscape firm who would come in with a bobcat with a hammer on the front to break it up. And then think about what you want to replace it with. Do you want to replace it with wood? Do you want to replace it with something like the landscaping masonry units? A lot of different, depending on what your house looks like, what would look nice on the front of that house. And if you're thinking of selling, talk to a broker. And just say, look, is this worth doing? If I do it, what do you think would look nicer? What's going to give my house the most street appeal? How am I going to get as much back on my investment as possible?
There we go.
Excellent, excellent. My front driveway also is cement. It's cracked in various places. It is also sunk down. That'd be the same thing. Talk to a broker first or talk to a jack. That's pretty much a replacement, I think.
You know, Madison, as we said, is such an overheated market right now that I would definitely talk to a good Madison broker, somebody who specializes in your neighborhood and in your price range, and they may say, hey, just leave it. It's going to sell in 2 hours in the middle of a bidding war anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, it's kind of a good time to own a home, at least in Madison, and want to sell it.
The market is so overheated right now. It is such a seller's market, Larry.
Let's go to Ken in Mayville next. Hi, Ken.
How you doing? So I have a well over 100-year-old house. We have a stone mortar foundation, cement floor basement, and you know, every now and then when I vacuum out or try to clean up down there, I'm always noticing like along the edges of the walls and stuff, just like the the mortar becomes powdery and is falling out over time.
Right.
I don't get moisture coming through, but at what point should I worry about putting more mortar in there, or, you know, how bad is it? Is there a way of stopping it?
If you've got 3/4 inch to an inch missing mortar, then you probably should think about doing something. Now, there's different types of stone foundation. Field stone foundations are very unforgiving. You know, the round pieces of glaciated granite. You really ought to be careful with those. The stack quarry rubble, where it's really the sandstone or limestone, that's not too bad. That's just fairly stable. Do you know what type of stone you have down there?
Yeah, it's field stone.
It's field stone. Okay, so now you've got to be a lot more careful because that can rotate out. That is a lime-based mortar, so you want to use a lime-based mortar in the repairs. You can probably actually do that yourself. If you want to email me, I'll send you the mortar recipe. And the mortar recipe that I have is what I call a good throwing mortar. It sticks.
Okay.
And I can send you the specifications for exactly how to do it. Real short email address, frei@chorus.net. And chorus like a group of singers, C-H-O-R-U-S. And I'd be happy to send you those specifications.
All righty. Sounds good. Thank you much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Does it pay? Somebody emailed in and wondered if it pays to put in solar. And we're not a lot of time here, but
that's a very difficult one, and that is definitely an ask your broker.
Yeah, definitely an ask your broker about it. John Freiberger, our guest today, Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures. His firm, Freiberger and Associates, works out of Madison, actually works all over the place because he does a lot of legal work as well in consulting. We'll be back with John after the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking home improvement today with John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structure. His firm is Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. We have many callers online, so I'm going to go, and all our lines are filled. So let's go to Richard in Mountain next. Richard, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hello. Thanks for talking to me, John and Larry.
Sure.
John mentioned insulating the sill boxes with a spray, and I was wondering what you thought about this product that they sell at a big box store. It's about $300 to buy one of them kits that you can do it yourself. I wonder what you thought, if that's a good deal or if you shouldn't mess with that.
Richard, I don't know because I haven't seen it, but what I'd suggest you do is maybe go online and take a look at perhaps one company is FoamTech. And you can order the 25-pound canisters and things from them. The other thing to do is to talk to a local, the guy who comes with the truck with all the heavy equipment. You may find that it isn't going to cost that much more to have a professional do it for you. I mean, part of what you need to do is all the prep work. Is you need to clean out all those sill boxes. It'd be good to vacuum them out. You want to inspect for any kind of water entry or damage. I'm assuming you've got a wood exterior house, not a brick exterior?
Yep, it's wood. And
good.
I have already ripped out all the fiberglass insulation, and it was musty and moldy. And
yeah.
So I got that all cleaned out. And
yeah, I know you're way up there in Mountain. I have no idea what's up there as far as insulation contractors, but I would probably go ahead and get a couple of quotes and then check online with some of the very reputable firms. And then if you go to Menards, you know, who made it?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a FoamTech canister that they're selling.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. But, you know, as Larry and I always say, investigate before you take your wallet out.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling you guys.
There you go, Richard. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. All right. Jeff in Menominee Falls, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, and thanks for your comments and show on this.
Sure.
My question is, my son recently just bought a house in Menominee Falls area. It's a over 100-year-old farmhouse, and it's cold stone creamier brick on it, and it's in generally pretty nice shape, except the whole house had hardwood floors in it. And I did hear a couple callers ago comment on hardwood floors. But my question is specifically, These floors haven't been taken care of for quite a while, obviously, and all the planks, the gaps have opened up and there's dirt and stuff down in there. Is that something that can be repaired and refinished?
Now,
or is it better to tear it out? Or
let me ask you a couple of quick questions, Jeff. Now, are these sort of the normal 2.5-inch wide tongue and groove strips?
They're about 2.5-inch wide. I haven't looked in there. I don't know if it's tongue and groove.
Yeah, it almost certainly is. It's probably the very standard. There were these old Victorian floors that were very narrow. They were only 1 inch wide and 3/8 of an inch. What has happened there is when that flooring was put in, it was a little on the green side. So the flooring shrunk. And what happens is in the summer, it'll actually get a little bit tighter. If it's really, really bad, there are ways of doing it. There are some fillers that one can have made up that can fill it. You can also use some high build urethanes and things to fill it in. The problem is that our wood floors move. And if we totally fill the thing up and then we get a nice humid August, you may find some buckling in the floors. So they really were meant. Average wood floor has got some gaps in it, especially in the winter, and it's pretty tight in the summer. If they're put in too tight, I've actually seen them buckle. So it's a difficult question. I think I would get a line on one or two really good floor refinishers by checking local references and have them come over and take a look at it and get a professional opinion from somebody who can stand there and look at it.
Yeah.
Is the value of a leaving the hardwood floor and having it refinished versus having it maybe a new laminate type floor? With the current material and such.
Well, yes. Yeah. So the problem is if you put these new LVTs and things are absolutely wonderful. The problem is you're probably looking at tearing out all of that hardwood floor and putting down new subfloors. So you're looking at a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I think I would, as we talk to Gus, the 78-year-old gentleman with his hardwood floors, I always, if you can save it, let's save it. Because that is usually the least expense and it's the best green architecture. So it's not going to cost anything to get a couple of good professional opinions. So let's start there and talk to a couple local refinishers who are well thought of and see what they think.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thanks so much for calling, Jeff. And Jessica, your turn now in Eau Claire. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. See, I am also calling about the spray foam. I haven't had the energy assessment done yet, but I did have a guy come in and tell me that the box fills for sure would be done, as well as where my walls meet, like the roof of my house or the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Attic. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I was wondering, is that really enough to actually make a difference?
Yes. Now, a couple things to think about. 40% of the heat loss of the average house, of course, no one has an average house, but nationally we know that about 40% of our heat loss in the northern climate is from air changes. So the air that's coming in through your sill boxes and going out through the ceiling and out through the attic is where a lot of your heat loss is. So let's start with an energy inspection, though. And we really want them to do the depressurization test where they put the fan in your front door and figure out how bad the air changes are in your house. So let's get a little bit of science there first. If the air changes are really bad and the attic is really leaky, then what I recommend is that all of the insulation that's in the attic be vacuumed out. They come with a giant truck, which is a big vacuum cleaner on wheels. In about 2-3 hours, they have your whole attic cleared out. Then we put a spray foam basis down in the attic. Basically, we're spraying the top of the ceiling. That gives you a vapor barrier, some thermal improvement, as well as an air barrier. So we're stopping that airflow. So we're stopping the airflow out through the attic, and then we do the sill boxes. We stop it in. We may still get some drafts around the windows, but we may have decreased the heat loss in your house so much at that point that the other things are going to have a minimal payback. But start with that energy inspection. So go to Focus on Energy. Try to find somebody who's independent. Most of them are now employees of insulation companies. But let's get a little bit of science, and then that should indicate your way forward.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jessica. And Norman in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Norman.
Good afternoon. I'd like to ask John if he's got any ideas
about how to keep a sealer on blacktop. We live in a wooded area. No blacktop sealer company will give us any guarantee because they say, if you got trees, we won't guarantee it. And we've tried different sealers ourselves. We've pressure washed it. We've used special blacktop cleaners. And, you know, every winter it just seems to flake off. And in spring we're about back to where we were back in September or August when we sealed it. And I'm at my wit's end as what to do because we really need to seal it.
Norman, I feel your pain. I've got a giant cottonwood and a silver maple I'm really thinking of taking an axe to. Because I've got the same problem. I do have a gentleman coming in with an asphalt-based sealer that he believes is going to work much better than the latex-type ones. I really don't have a good recommendation for you, but I do have the same issue. The trees, we have moisture, and then, of course, we have acids from the leaves, so it really affects the sealers. I think the latexes are, in my impression, this is not based on science, but my impression is that the latexes aren't as good as some of the petroleum-based ones. But, of course, you know, the petroleum-based, you've got a long drying time. You've got at least 24 hours where you can't use your driveway. So I'm afraid all you can do is do your own investigation because I don't have any words of wisdom here.
Other than cut the trees down.
Yeah, which we don't want to do.
Appreciate your honesty.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Norman. Appreciate the call. Well, let's go to Hudson, see what's on Rich's mind next. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, hi. I have a lower-level area that we're remodeling. It has two rooms and a kitchen. And we're looking at replacing the flooring. It's just on a slab. We're considering maybe doing stained concrete or otherwise going in another direction like bamboo. I'm just wondering what your opinion is on the stained concrete and the value there.
I think it's a real good choice. The nice thing about it is, you know, we can put down bamboo, but how good a vapor barrier do we have underneath that concrete floor? Are we going to end up with some problems with the bamboo, or are we going to end up with some problems with the stability of the wood? I've seen some really nice splatter stain jobs where it looked really neat, you know, and then get a good quality sealer or wax over, and it looked good. I do not know what the comparative costs are, because usually when I've been involved in these projects, the people want one look or they want another look.
Yeah.
And I would most certainly talk to whoever your local flooring store is before I selected anything. I mean, they may say, look, you've got a relatively decent floor. Let's go with LVT. It's more stable than bamboo. Or they may say, well, they're about the same. But get some good professional help from a good quality, you know, not a big box, but, you know, a professional flooring installer, somebody who's going to stand behind this for at least 5 years. And then you can do your cost-benefit analysis. Price-wise, as far as the value you're getting, if I were doing it, I would probably do the stained concrete because I think it's going to be less expensive. And if the people absolutely hate it, they're not like, they might hate bamboo, and then they're tearing out the bamboo. But if we just got stained concrete, they could always go over it with something else if they wanted. So I think it gives some flexibility to the potential buyer. Make sense?
Yep.
All right. Thank you for calling. And on to Tom in Wanakee next. Hi, Tom.
Yes.
What's on your mind today?
Regarding home inspection, is it advisable for a seller to have a home inspection done before listing a home?
Maybe. I have done them. Generally, if you call me, Tom, the first thing I would say is talk to your attorney. Now, you have to be honest when you fill in that real estate condition report. But if you're honestly ignorant, you're honestly ignorant. The other worry I have is if you have Smith Inspection come in and then the buyers don't do their own inspection, are you implying that you're giving them a warranty? I think unless you suspect there's really issues with your house that might kill the deal, I would probably avoid it. Now, the places where I have done pre-listing inspections, it's usually mom has passed away and the kids live in Kansas and they don't know anything about the house and they don't want to be going back and forth, so they want to know what the issues are. But it sounds like if you're just a normal seller, I would fill in the condition report as best you can and leave it to the buyer's home inspector to be the the professional, the registered professional, who determines what the condition of the house is.
I see. Okay. But I wasn't doing it thinking about it because there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'd want to find out if there's something wrong, so if I needed to have something repaired or repair it, I could get that done and there wouldn't be any kind of delay.
Right, and that's where I do the pre-listing inspections. It's where people really don't want to have a delay. So if that is the case, you want to be really sure that it goes through, then yes, then it may make sense. But make very sure that the people still get their own inspector and that they are not relying upon your inspector's opinions. You know, he is working for you. You don't necessarily have to share that report and make sure they get their own inspector, because you don't want to do this implied warranty thing. You know, this thing where they go, well, Tom told us, and now the roof is leaking and we want Tom to pay for it, right?
Yeah.
So we want to transfer that liability to the inspector who is working for the buyer.
Is it required to have a home inspection? Did a seller the buyer gets it, or is there options, or can you just sell, like, when you were talking about that lake property, which would probably be a teardown, can you just sell, you know, as is?
Certainly. And certainly the buyer, many buyers still do not bother with home inspection.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's Larry is going, this is dangerous. But yes, but it is indeed true.
My understanding, they'll run $400-$500 maybe.
Yes. Yep. You are generally right. I'd say $325 is the low end, and it can really go up from there.
Sure.
Yeah. There you go.
Good information.
Thank you very much for calling. Well, let's go to Rebecca in Iron Ridge next. Rebecca, hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
We have a basement floor. It's our family room. One room, we have a bedroom that's carpeted. The rest of it we did ceramic tile. The family room is a pretty big room, about 20 by 20, something like that.
Yeah.
And it has old carpeting with a foam back that we need to take up. And I was wondering what's a good type of product to use, like a floating laminate wood floor carpeting or this porcelain tile. There's a kind of porcelain tile that you can kind of click together.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
It's more expensive, and I think you do put a grout line, but you don't have to glue it down.
Hmm, wow.
And they're relatively heavy pieces, so I think that that's part of what keeps them
They're in place. Right. Certainly some of the porcelains, like the porcelain from Crossville, is some really dense stuff. I mean, we specified to put in shopping malls where you've got literally a million feet walking across it. My favorite is, unless we're doing... We talked about doing stained concrete. That's another option. But I really like the porcelain tiles, not the clay tiles, but the actual porcelain tiles, because they're so tough. You know, you can throw a rug over them, and you can roll the rug up. And the worry that we always have with concrete floors is we don't know if there's a vapor barrier on there or not. So if we put in a laminate flooring and we start trapping moisture under there, and then that laminate starts deforming, or we start getting mold under there, that becomes a worry. And without digging a hole in the floor, how do we know what we really have under there? So this really safe thing, I think, is either something topical and thin like a stain, or to go ahead and put down a porcelain floor. And if there is something that you can actually snap together, that would be pretty amazing. Usually on a basement floor, there's enough irregularity that we end up with masonry grout type set, mortar set is the word I'm looking for here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're saying... use maybe one with the mortar that you put down, and then you put the tile on top, and that settles it in place. That would that be a moisture barrier then?
Well, more or less. The porcelain is about as impermeable to vapor as possible. One other thing to think about is you probably have some cracks in your floor, or you have some control joints. You may wish to actually have control joints in your tile floor. So if you've got a control joint every 10 feet, you might want to have what's called a soft joint. So you'd lay the tile over the sections of concrete, but where the seam is, then you would do a soft joint there, because things are still going to move a little bit.
A soft joint between the tiles, is that
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, talk to a very good quality installer.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Lynn in Sparta, your turn now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I have a question. I know you're talking about Wisconsin. I have a niece in Twin Cities who has a house that was diagnosed with lead and didn't show up. They had the house for a number of years, didn't show up until they had children, and, of course, the children were tested.
Right.
Is there a statute of limitations? I know you're Wisconsin, but is there some kind of general, or do you know about Minnesota?
Now, are you talking about statute of limitation for an inspector?
I'm assuming when you buy a house, there is an inspection done. And when did those regulations start generally? And is there how long do they apply?
Well, I can tell you what we have in Wisconsin, and you can very easily just Google the Minnesota regulations for home inspectors in Minnesota. But in Wisconsin, home inspectors do not have to check for lead. Now, the assumption in Wisconsin is that if the house was built, I can't remember, Larry, whether it's 76 or 78, but the assumption is that there's lead paint in all houses that were built prior to, let's call it, the mid-1970s.
Okay. So
I doubt whether there is any recourse against the, again, I'm giving you legal advice, but talk to the attorney about this, but I doubt very much whether there's any recourse. What they need to do is figure out the source of the lead. What we have found out when we have tested is that often the source of the lead is in the window sashes as they go up and down.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
That's my understanding of their house.
Right, right. Because there's often no peeling paint. It's a well-maintained, middle-class, nice house. But every time we open and close those windows, we've got an issue. Uh-huh. So sometimes we end up having to replace the sashes, or we have to strip the sashes and redo them with a non-lead paint. Most lead in houses is simply encapsulated. So you need to have somebody who can come in daughter-in-law needs to come in, have somebody do some testing, try to determine where the lead is coming from, and then take remedial action.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling. I appreciate your call. Ray emailed to say she is thinking about finishing her basement as a rec room. Will it add any value when it's sold? She has no immediate plans to move.
Yes, it'll probably add some value. It's probably going to be between 40 and 50%, depending upon the quality of the work. And I find that actually to be somewhat surprising. But the statistics for what's called the North Central area, which is Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin, say that you will get up to 50% back for finishing a basement room.
So if you spend $25,000, you're going to get $12,000 roughly value back from
correct.
That.
But if the kids are driving you crazy and you need a place to put them the next 3 years till the house is sold, that rec room may be invaluable.
there's something to be said for that, for sure. Well, I tell you what, John, here we are out of time. Always a pleasure to have you come by, and you'll be back again soon, and we'll do this all over again.
I look forward to it, Larry.
And John, you have a contact information. You don't have a website, do you?
Larry, I'm actually going to leap into the 20th century, not the 21st, and I am going to have somebody put up a website for me. And what he will have on it is all of these documents that we refer to. So I'm hoping by the next time I can see you, I'm going to tell you what the new FCC website is. I am doing this only for you.
Thank you, John. Oh, man. John Freiberger does a wonderful job. His firm, Freiberger and Associates, he works out of Madison, Fitchburg, really works kind of all over the place, frankly. Stay with us. Lots in store.